You're listening to the Pulled by the Root podcast. For more information, visit us on the web at www.pulledbytheroot.com.
Hello, everyone. This is Heidi Marble. If my voice sounds a little different, it's because my grand nugget gave me another virus, and I love her so much, but I sound like I've, you know, been smoking cigars, which is not the case. So I just, in case my voice doesn't sound recognizable, it is me. It is me. And I am here with the lovely Amy Hansen. And we are just so happy to have George Barbacazzi. Can you say it for me, George? Because I'm sure your accent is going to make it sound so much better.
Barbacazzi.
Oh, see, I knew it. I'm not even.
You were close. You were close.
I wasn't even close, George, but thank you for that. So I want to start off with George's bio, but before we do that, George, would you just mind jumping in really quick and telling our audience how we connected? Because that was a really, it was a hard stop moment for me when I got your message.
I believe I listened to the episode interviewing Madrid. What's her name? Sorry.
Michelle Madrid.
Michelle yeah. Madrid. And I was working and I had to leave work and then go and have a good cry because it touched the chord, especially when she's talking about that she's been, she did that therapy that she got in the fetal position and something. It just, I don't know, it just touched something really deep for me. And then I sent you a message, I think, and I wanted to get in touch with you. And my main thing was that I would love to reach out to adoptees who are also in LGBTQ community that you don't hear. And it's a very marginalized adoptees, which is on top of that we had to deal with when we're growing up. We had to deal with this, especially my generation, with the shame that you're gay.
Yes, George. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And we need to talk so much about that. First, I just want people to know a little bit about you. You are a filmmaker, a writer, and a director living in Los Angeles. And one of the first questions you get is, where is your accent from? And this is what you say. George was born in 1974 in Russia, Soviet Union. He was adopted from an orphanage in 1976 and raised in Georgia, the country. In 2000, he migrated to Australia and was granted a gay refuge status. Since 2010, he splits his time between Los Angeles and Sydney, Australia. George is on a lifelong search of his birth history, and as of today, has no information about his birth parents or the first 2 years of his life. Wow, George. Well, first of all, I want to speak to your creativity just to lighten things up for a minute. I watched your film reel that you did in 2019. What a gift you have to capture emotion and beauty. So just thank you so much for putting that kind of content out into the world. It's definitely, definitely needed. You had a post and I literally took a screenshot of it. This is what it says. Putting your head on the pillow at the end of the day and being so damn proud of yourself that you are navigating the absolute shit show of being human. I'm like, yes, George. So I think that's a great segue. So George, why don't you start by just wherever you want to start with your story? You know, when we talked on the phone, I was just so moved by the experience of talking to you. So the floor is yours.
Okay. So first of all, thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate this opportunity, and I really appreciate what you do for the adoption community, for everyone. This podcast has been very healing and I had a very cathartic effect on me. So I'm sure there are a lot of people who have the same reaction. Well, until up to 2 years ago, my life reminds me parable from David Foster Wallace commencement speech, in which two fish swimming along the river, and and a counter, an old fish who swims the other direction. So the older fish asks the younger fishes, "Hey boys, how is the water?" And one of the younger fish looks at the other younger fish and says, "What the hell is the water?" So that's been my life up to 2 years ago. So floating in the river and asking, "What the hell is the water?" I have been so blissfully unaware until 2 years ago, the magnitude my adoption secrecy had on my entire life, pretty much every aspect of my life. So yeah, and right now I'm right in the eye of a tornado called coming out of adoption fog. Everything about my adoption is a mystery. Elderly who could tell me anything, they no longer around, and the younger ones don't know much because they were younger ones. And everything about adoption that time in Georgia in 1976, 70s and 80s was top secret. You could actually get arrested if you told anybody they were adopted.
That's
Yes.
Shocking, George. And you know, one of the things you told me when we talked is when they transferred you from Russia to Georgia, there was a physical destroying of your paperwork. Is that correct? Can you expand more on that?
Yes. So last 2 years, I've been trying to track down, obviously, my birth history, which is originated in Russia. But dealing with adoption in Russia, I probably have more better option to meet Putin there than I find out who I am, because it's impossible. They sealed this adoption paperwork for 75 years. So when the adoptee reaches 75, which means the adopted parents and adopted and the mother, biological mother, probably will be dead, right? So I contacted U.S. consulate because I was afraid of the schemers and, you know, get involved in some crazy situations on top of what I'm dealing with. And U.S. consulate put me in with Americans who live in the U.S., lawyers, and who dealt with this one before. But because I don't know my name, I don't know anything about my birth history, I'm looking for some, like a phantom. It's impossible to find out everything. So my history pretty much starts when I was adopted as 2-year-old boy from Russian orphanage in St. Petersburg, then Leningrad, and they brought me to Georgia. So my parents could not have a child themselves. And they were without a child for 9 years. And when the relationship started to become shaky because there was no child, and especially social pressure at that time in Georgia, it was all about becoming a mother and being a grandma. That was woman's first, you know, job. And so I think my mother decided to adopt a girl. So she went to Russia. And when she went to the orphanage, I apparently ran to her and would not let her go to take me home. Yeah.
George, gosh.
And she decided that this was a sign from universe, and she adopted me.
Wow, George. Well, while I get a Kleenex, Amy, help.
Yeah. So I do have a quick question. So she went there to adopt a girl, you think. Were you told anything by your adopted family? I know you said it was illegal and you weren't supposed to be talking about that, but do you have any knowledge?
No. So I grew up this very blonde kid, almost like Swedish looking kid amongst Mediterranean family. So that was not a brainer that I was not physically, biologically related to this family. Georgians are very much like Italians or Greeks, and I was like blonde as blonde. So from very early on, I had suspicions, obviously, and you know, even unconsciously that there is something wrong. But my every time somebody would ask, "Oh, who is this kid? Is this your kid, really?" My mother had this ready answer that, "Oh yeah, he looks exactly like his father looked like when in his age." And the other one was, "Oh, his grandmother is a German dissident," which is totally, it was total BS. And I start going along with that story too, because it was just hard to explain people that I did not even know what to explain. I've never been told anyone. So the secrecy went on and on and on until I start to become more and more curious. And because I knew that I could not ask, I was sensing that, right? So it's off the top. So I used to love makeup stories. I was this flamboyant, happy child, heart of the party, and stuff like that. So I made up stories. The kids called me adopted in the school, and I was trying to figure out what would my mother's reaction be. So my mother came home and I lied. The kids, this is what kids called me. My mother was working in a bank. She had a really, she was very successful and very well known. And my auntie, my father's sister, was a judge. So they called the school and they threatened the school to sue everybody who will ever mention some such a thing. Yes. So next day I went to the school and kids like, "Hi, how are you?" I knew that there was like already totally change in body language and everything. So I knew that reaction my mother and my auntie had that proved my suspicions.
George, that's it just feeds into the secrecy again and the lies and the shame, because
Yeah.
everything surrounding who you were now is even threatened at a higher level.
Oh yeah. So
Like, shh.
when I look at my childhood, there is a big neon banner flashing: secrecy, shame, and fear. So that was what it was. And then around that time, when I start thinking about, so what does it mean? So when I was 9, my father passed away. He was an alcoholic. And I stayed, my mother raised me as a single mother, and I thought that was the best thing that happened to us, because I was always bullied and laughed at by men. So being surrounded by women, that was my safety net. And until today, in my writing, I can tell that very often I take female perspective, because I know female psychology so well. I grew up only with women. My mother's friends, divorcees, widows, and so on. So yeah, they would sit in our home and reading me in the coffee and telling me that I would have a great wife and so many kids and so successful. There's a perfect picture that my mother had created in her head about me.
So, George, that wasn't the path that you took. So, can you tell us when you came to terms with your sexuality and you
Yes,
presented
so
that? Like,
yeah.
do you mind sharing that? Because I think that's important for a lot of
Sure.
people listening.
So when I knew already that I was adopted and start thinking what that meant, right about that time I start realizing and I'm attracted to boys and not the girls. I liked playing with the girls. I had a lot of girlfriends, but not the way that I was attracted to the boys. So because nobody spoke about it, and I did not know what it was, and I could not ask anybody or read or watch. I mean, this is Soviet Union, and like might as well been like a 1920s US, right? So a small town in Georgia. So I decided that it was some type of cancer that nobody spoke. So, and then I also start thinking about that, oh, this was the reason why my birth mother did not want me. This was because I was bad. because I had this disease.
Oh, George.
On top of everything, you know, with how your adoption affected you, and then to have this piled on top of it, and living in a country where it's not talked about, it's looked down upon. I can't imagine what you were going through. Did you have any type of support in your life, a friend, anybody that could
None.
understand?
None.
Oh, wow.
For a long time, I could not talk to anyone about it. And then, obviously, when I start to get older and had urges and made advances because I did not know what else to do, obviously, it made worse. And people start teasing me, and it became as bad that I had to actually think how to be physically safe. So you know that thing, that DNA symbol, that two things twisting and turning together? So that was my sexuality versus my adoption story. So I don't know which one was going which way, and they intertwine and something. So you know, I had no idea what, because I think my adoption story and thinking about what adoption meant took on a back seat because I was so fight or flight mode in terms of being safe, physically safe,
Wow.
because I was, well, there was no word to be gay. The only word they used to use was pederast, which means, I think it's a French word that means people who I'm not quite sure definition, but nothing good.
So, George, you have all of this stacked against you. How do you come into your own? Like, what did that journey look like? And I know we only have an hour podcast, I understand, but I think it's really important because what I feel from you so distinctly, George, is how strong and kind and good you are. Like, seriously, how did you do that? Oh, George, I just want to hug you. Like, seriously, you could have turned out to be such a wicked, evil man if you wanted
Yeah,
to. And
so
nobody would have said anything.
I did, you know, I was 16 when my drunken uncle finally told me that I was adopted. Me and my mother had fight, and but I decided that day I decided I would never confront my mother. So the other big neon sign in my life's always been loyalty. So out of loyalty, I never ever decided when I was 16 that I would never speak to my mother. I respected her decision. I knew what were her decisions, that I would find out and run away or whatever. And because I could not release that energy in six at 16, around that age, I developed so much anger that I actually wanted to have a gun and kill everybody around me. So after that, I moved to the big city, and I start to understand in a really bad ways what it was that I did not have cancer. So there are the people who have this thing, whatever it is. And I think, you know, despite that, my mother and I never spoke about any of this, she loved me unconditionally. And I think that gave me such a big, strong backbone to stand up for anything in life. Yeah, so you know, I knew she did not do what she did to hurt me. She dedicated all her life to me, and I would never forget until she died. She would smell my neck and say that was her favorite smell. So I would I have a friend. The other day, she was worrying about raising her children, and I said, "Look, I think the only way you can do is love them unconditionally, and the rest is just up to the nature. You can't do anything about it." And my mother did exactly that. Even we never spoke about my sexuality or about my adoption. And then I moved to big city. I got into Academy of Arts. I was into arts, got into one of the most prestigious art school. And I knew that I always wanted to leave. I was always, since I remember myself standing on a map and imagining I'm in Shanghai. I had no idea what Shanghai meant, but sounded good. So graduating Academy of Arts, I moved to Australia. I actually went to Australia as a journalist. I was working in a Georgian television, and people start calling and threatening. And when I realized that still was not safe for me to physically be in Georgia, I went to Australia as a journalist for the Olympics, and I applied for refugee status there, which I got right away. And so last 20 years of my mother's life, we were not together. She lost me anyway, in a way. And I would see her once a year and give her that pain to have that talk. Some things, you don't have to say. Some things just have to be buried, I guess, the untold.
Wow. One of the things that you said when we talked is people ask you where you're from. And your answer to that, it just broke my heart. Maybe you can share that with people because you said your accent is this blend of different things and
Yes, so I get asked where I'm from in every single country in the world, including the country I grew up, because first of all, I don't look Georgian, and now I don't sound Georgian because I have an accent when I speak Georgian. So I speak several languages. I speak all of them with an accent. So belonging to me has been the most difficult part to come terms with, because I don't know what or who I belong to. Not knowing anything who you are, even and to the worst thing is that 2 years ago I was in Georgia, and my cousin just matter of fact mentioned that the birthday you're celebrating is not your real birthday. So the birthday I've been celebrating for last 46 years is not even my birthday. And sometimes I get really angry about the word loyalty, and I want to just go, fuck loyalty. That did not do any good to me. I've been loyal to so many people along the way, but who cared about me? People could not even tell me that I've been celebrating wrong birthday. I mean, who does that?
Yeah, George, and see that is the point. It's just the unfairness of it all. And as you said, this the marginalized part of this, being adopted marginalizes you. The fact that you, are gay marginalizes. There's so many things there that are just so difficult. Amy, do you have any thoughts or questions about that before I move on through our interview here?
No, I mean, when you talk about loyalty, and to have that cousin come out and do that to you, I mean, I don't even know what to say. Like, what was the point? What was the point of all of that? And
I asked them what information they had about my adoption. And well, they were young at the time, they did not know. But she tells you, that your birthday you're celebrating, it's not your real birthday. And then it's like I actually felt that the earth just opened under my feet. What are you talking about? That's the only thing I can hold on to. Even that's not true. So what, who am I? What am I? I don't have real name. I don't know who is my birth parent, where I was born, what happened to first 2 years of my life. I don't know any of that. Now you're telling that even birthday was changed. And yes, all like I asked Georgian government to release any documentation they have my adoption, but looks like my family was so influential that they destroyed all evidence.
Wow.
Being my starts from when I was brought in Georgia 2 years old.
Yeah, that's it's just so, and I'm sure your story sadly is not unique, George. And I'm so glad that you're pointing this out, because the extra challenge, you know, we're domestic adoptees and it's hard here, and we have DNA and we have access and we are in our own country. And it's very painful and hard, but you have, when you open it up to the world and you see all the corruption, and it's overwhelming. This is clearly a global injustice. There's no way around it. It just,
especially Russia, that has the most toughest law about adoption.
I didn't know that.
Impossible to find out anything. So I tried legally, I tried illegally, I tried to bribe people, I tried to do anything that possible to get my hands on something, like have somebody go into archives and see my original birth certificate or something. No, people actually can get arrested there. So nobody wants to risk it.
Oh, gosh, George. Well, you're talking about being in the eye of the hurricane. Clearly, you've been in the eye of the hurricane a lot. But the fog, you know, I mean, I call it adoption weather. It's like, what the hell's the weather today? You know, the adoption fog is no joke. And you said you're in the middle of it. What does that mean exactly? Like, if you can articulate it.
As I told you, I started 2 years ago, and since then I've been drinking like from the fire hose, everything I can read and listen and stuff. So it's been overwhelming, but when I read Primal Wound, I had a total meltdown, because for the first time in my life, I could put words to my feelings. It was not just I was this angry guy who would burst in tears, no reason, quote unquote. There were reasons for it. And I've been, I guess what I mean is that I'm in the middle of dealing with Russia, dealing with my family in Georgia, dealing with everybody to find something. I've done any possible DNAs possible, but Russia does not recognize this for DNAs. They have their own DNAs, but in Russia, DNA testing is only for rich and famous. Normal people don't do this. This is a new thing. So maybe 0.5% of Russia has done DNA, and it's only within the country, which means I have to go to Russia and do DNA there, which is not safe for me to go to Russia with an American passport, what's going on at the moment. So there is a brick wall after brick wall after brick wall, but at least I know how to. I have a therapist, and with his help and with asking right questions, you know, that, okay, I'm not crazy. This is real. And people, oh my God, listening, people talking about this so many times. Yep, that's me. Yep, that's me. Listening all these interviews you do with people. It's like the other day, this guy was talking about that, walking aimlessly on the street and looking in the houses. And yes, of course, we're all searching for something unconsciously, right? And all my life, I had this thing that when people leave, I'm standing in the doorway and I watch them until actually they disappear. And then I realized, of course, that's probably my last image of my biological mother as a child. So I never actually put these two together.
Sorry, George.
Yeah, I think, like you said about the primal wound, George, that book also opened up my eyes too, when I started realizing what adoption had done to me throughout my entire life, and could put words to these feelings and to these reactions. And that we do struggle a lot with abandonment. I just wish none of us had to go through any of this pain that I don't think people realized what the impact it has. And I appreciate you sharing so honestly.
Yeah, I do too, George. Sorry, I rarely have little to say, but that really hit, because I also do that. I I used to watch my husband drive away and just watch his headlights till they would fade until nothing. And it felt like the worst feeling in the world. And so I think we can relate, and thank you for providing that moment of realization that all of us can relate to. And I know, George, that you took some notes, and I want to make sure that we're touching on everything that's important to you in this interview. And certainly I have tons of questions, so I just wanted to give you a moment to see if there's anything else that you really wanted to touch on.
I guess I'm a writer, and for me, authenticity is so important, to get in touch with my core authentic self, which I don't know what my authentic self is. If you don't know who you are, how you know that you exist, and who what is your authentic self? Because throughout the life, I lived in the country, I grew up in the country where I had to suppress all my authenticity. I moved up to Australia, and I had to adjust to new culture and everything. I was in Georgia. I had to, there's so many times I start from like a square one, and where's the authenticity? But it's helping me, And when you're asking me, I think for me, I'm not in healing. I'm in a coping process. I'm way far away from healing, and I don't believe we ever be healing, but I think at some point we start to cope with this. I have this image, this 2-year-old myself, whatever that little boy endured in that Russian orphanage, he gave me so much strength that I can live on that today. I have this writing a movie, and I'm putting in there, but this been like throughout, like a dream in my life. Then I'm going to this orphanage and grabbing this little boy's hand and taking him and walking with him along. I can feel the fear and strength of this terrified 2-year-old boy that watching other kids being adopted, and he's been sitting there and waiting for, I don't know. So I think, yeah, getting in touch with that little boy helped me a lot.
I think so many of us can relate. It was really interesting in the middle of the night. I was thinking about all the ways that we don't care for ourselves because of worthiness issues. But if we can reframe it and think about that child where all of this started and have compassion for that, the way that you describe that. It's just so important and so beautiful because I think a lot of times we feel like we can just crumple ourselves up and throw us away, throw
I
our
lost a
world away.
child along the way, and I just starting to know the child and got to know and found him again. So I think whatever it will be, I that child's gonna help me. So
I think a lot of people will feel that, don't you, Amy?
yeah.
Absolutely. And George, I think about your art, which is so beautiful, your writing, your filmmaking. Can we talk a little bit about that for a moment? Because you mentioned that you have an idea, or maybe you started filming already, I don't know, about this 2-year-old boy. What can you tell us about how your art, what has it meant to you? Because I preach it, George. Expression is everything. And it doesn't have to be like high quality like yours. I want everybody to just know it's okay if you're not a filmmaker. You can still you can do the thing. So could we talk about that part of your journey, please?
Or writing and filmmaking for me been life-saving. This is where I channel everything and my deepest fears and regrets and like so on. As it is as of today, I'm starting to realize that I might have not never have a questions that I'm looking for, questions that where am I? Where I come from? Who is my birth mother? Where was I born? I might never have questions, but then big question I keep asking, okay, what is this? Is it? What is? I will never find out anything more than that. How should I move forward? And that's the question I'm asking in the film, and I'm doing this from point of view from my birth mother. I have this question, if she ever thought about me, if she ever looked for me. And obviously I might never have answers, so I wanna answer with my feel. And obviously it's been tremendously helpful to have this outlet, you know, writing and channel all this there. Otherwise, I don't remember things. You know, somebody was saying the other day that they're writing a book, and I was like, how do you remember how to details? Because then I'm thinking about my childhood. I don't remember a lot of things except like a pillow moments, because I was so on fight and flight mode and not present. I don't have memories. I don't have a lot of memories, because I was always like, I was sitting in the school, in the classroom, while teacher was talking about something, and I was planning how to go home, which route to choose, so I won't be beaten up and teased and harassed by the boys. So this was my life, thinking 3 steps ahead of me. And obviously I became adult when I was 16. I felt like 36 already, and all this stuff. So writing gave me this, you know, not memories, but a lot of fantasies, a lot of things. It all goes in my writing. Yes. And sometimes, you know, we think that writing is that we want to tell something to people, society. And then you write these things, and what do you realize? Actually, you want to find answers for yourself, or get more knowledge about something particular. It's all about ourselves, that we learn so much from our writing. You know, since I start writing, I ask questions that I've never asked before, and they've been tremendously helpful and cathartic. And I'm writing this movie. It's shot in New Mexico, and the main character is this Russian lady who gave up birth in Soviet Union, and family had to relocate to the US, and she's been looking for her sons every single day since then.
I can't imagine what that feels like to actually film that and write that.
Yeah.
It must have such a duality for you. Just
yeah, because
the ache of it and the excitement of
a lot obviously is my fantasy. And I've been talking to a lot of mothers who had to relinquish children, and they gave me a lot of understanding. I read the books, a lot of books. I talked to a lot of people, and I never thought that my mother did not want me. I never had that thing. I always thought that, you know, we as adopted children, we have this empathy in our DNA, you know, no matter what it is, no matter what we say, we are very empathetic people. It's just given, I think. And I always had this empathy towards my biological mother. So, yeah.
No, I can't wait to see it, George. The question that you ask, that you present, what if this is it? Wow. That is a question I think all of us should be asking, you know, what if this is it? What if this is all we get?
What if this is as good as it gets?
Yeah. Right. So what now? And because you're asking that question, I know you don't have any answers, George, but what are you thinking in terms of how you look at that question? Because obviously it means a lot to you. You're writing your film. So
Look, when I asked that question, I was in a very bad place, and it did not serve me really well, because unknowing is awful. It's the word, the hardest thing, not knowing, and it's even worse to know that not knowing is the only thing you will know in my situation, right? So when people are talking about a reunion, and it's sometimes it's disappointing, any kind of reunion better than not knowing, because at least you see some person that you come from, you resemble to, somebody who has same expressions, hands and ears and eyes, and you look at somebody, think, okay, well, I'm standing on the ground and I have roots. But in my case, I don't have any of this. So I actually really sometimes think that it's good that I start coming out of fog when I was, because if that happened 10 years ago, I would not have emotional maturity to deal with, to cope all this. And I would go down and take a lot of people with me. I know that for sure. Now I have some coping mechanisms, some way I can cope. Asking that question, there is no answer, you know. It's my art and it's my self-destruction. It was the first answer when I asked that a couple of years ago, but now I think, no, it's not the answer. It's answer is just move forward and get in touch with that little boy, and that's the answer, you know.
So beautifully answered, George. So as we get closer to the end of our time together today, you talked about coping, and you just, like I said before, you radiate something so beautiful that the world needs. You have so many people listening to you. They need to hear what you have to say. So if you can just think about that for a moment, and what message do you want to relay to people that may not ever have that answer like you?
Yeah, so as I said, I wish I had a podcast like this a long time ago, and I really want to directly talk to people who are in a similar situation. They don't know who they are. They might never know, looking for, searching or not, and especially if they are in a LGBT community, part of LGBT community. I know for you guys, it's even harder. Because in our generation, we had to work harder to prove ourselves, not on top of being adopted, that you'd have taken seriously because you're a gay person, because we grew up in the 80s, right? So it's all very hard. And if you have that question, that what's next, this does not get easier, but what I can promise that it gets bearable at some point. And I think that's important. And you know, you'll matter and you'll have what it takes, yeah, to get through all this.
Oh, George, I have a feeling a lot of people are going to rewind and play that over and over again. Amy, do you have anything you want to add before I have a little something that I wanted to end with George here, but just wanted to hear from you, Amy.
Yes, George, like Heidi said, you are a light, you are a strength, because you're bringing so much to us in this community. I hope. And if you want to share, if you have some people in your
Sure.
life that are there for you and what they do for you, so that people know they're not alone, and that maybe how to go about finding support and friendship. And I'm just curious about that.
So, I'm really lucky. I'm married to a man who loved me so much that I started loving myself. So, and that's unconditional love. We've been together for 20 years, and he showed me what unconditional love is. So I have that. And I have friends in my life who tell me every day how much they love me. However, you know, the sense of loneliness, despite that, never leaves you as an adopted child. You know, you can talk to your people you love, but there is only so much you can talk to them, you know, and about trauma and about what you're going through. And at the end of the day, you know, if they have no experience, they can listen to your stories for so long, but they won't relate to. And listening to this kind of podcast, I understand, oh my God, I don't know this person, but we share exactly the same experiences, and that makes you so not alone, you know? So the other thing is go obviously to get help, you know, find the right help that works for you. It took me a long time to find the help to it's very important to get a therapist, probably that has expertise with adoptees or adoption related. So, but look, if you feel lonely, just reach out. You know, I'm here for you guys, and yeah, it's I'm I understand. If you tell me your stories, trust me, I will understand.
So, George, I wanted to end on something, another post. I know you're like, what are you stalking my Instagram for? I don't know, George. It's just research, R&D. But this was a post that stood out to me, and I wanted to ask you why after I read it. Why did you post it? This is what it says: love, innovate, adventure, live your passion, hustle, challenge yourself, and my favorite part, stay wild forever.
This I stand for all of these things, despite that I am going such a hard time. I'm a wild child at heart, so I always been that way, and that's never gonna end. And
Me too, George. Let's stay
I love my
wild.
wild side. I embrace that, and yeah. So it's important, because it's sometimes this what we feel can cover it and overshadow this really wild child in ourselves. But it's there, guys. It's there. Just go find that. So they're all there.
Yeah, I feel like the wild is the freedom,
Yeah.
maybe that we never got to feel. So I think
Sounds
that's beautiful, George.
interesting.
So everyone stay wild, whatever that means, just don't get arrested. Oh, George, on a serious note, and Amy, thank you so much for being here. So many people are going to be helped by your message, George. And I really hope you'll come back on the podcast and we can talk more because I just think we're just scratching the surface.
I
Thank you,
really
George.
appreciate the opportunity.
Oh my gosh, of course, George.
Thank you for listening. We hope it meant something to you. Tell us your story, learn more about our mission, and support the podcast at www.pulledbytheroot.com.